The Hoop Heads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Anybody that knows Brad Stamps will tell you that that's number one. Relationships are so big, you know, and you put so much into this, and you know, there's so much that both sides are given, and you know, you become family, and you know, you're just trying to impact people in a positive way. And I've had so many people that have given me opportunities in this game. This game has been so good to me, not just because of the personal memories that I have as a player, but as a coach. And at the end of the day, I wouldn't think that the wins and losses are going to define me, and I believe they're not. And those relationships still to this day, when I have teammates of mine that are going through things, or I have former players of mine that are calling me, inviting me to their weddings, or, you know, or telling me that they're, you know, I see they're graduating from college or they're having kids. There's nothing better than that.
Coach Brad Stamps is currently the associate head coach at his alma mater, Fayetteville High School in Arkansas. Brad's first job was coaching 8th grade basketball at Woodland Junior High, where he worked alongside his mentor and current Fayetteville High School head coach, Kyle Adams. Coach Stamps later became the head coach at Shiloh Christian, where he took a program that had won only one game the year before he arrived and turned it into a 28-game winner and state semifinalist in his final season. Brad also served as the head coach at Springdale High School, where he won 2 conference championships in 6 years and led the team to a state runner-up finish in his 5th year. Coach Stamps has also had several stints as an assistant coach and brings a unique perspective regarding the relationships, responsibilities, and skill sets needed to succeed as both a head coach and an assistant. Throughout his entire career, Brad has built relationships with his players and fellow coaches that have enabled him to have tremendous success. Coach Stamps' basketball journey has brought him full circle back to Fayetteville High School, where he is slated to take over when his mentor Kyle Adams retires. Please take some notes and enjoy this conversation with Fayetteville High School Associate Head Coach, Brad Stamps. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. On today's show, we have the pleasure of talking with Coach Brad Stamps, who is currently the associate head coach at his alma mater, Fayetteville High School in Arkansas. Welcome to the podcast, Brad. Could you start out by giving us a little background on how you first fell in love with the game of basketball?
Yeah, you know, basketball has always been one of those, you know, those games that as a kid you play. And for me, it was, you know, even though I was playing baseball and football, basketball just always seemed to be the game that interests me the most. And then as I, you know, grew up in Northwest Arkansas and became a, you know, a Fayetteville kid, it was, you know, you always looked at the what the junior high and the high school kids were doing, and it just always seemed like, you know, you could get a game of basketball. There was always a game going on somewhere in a neighborhood or at the Fayetteville Youth Center, and you know, that's where the game for me kind of started, and a lot of relationships, you know, early on from those games and from those kids that, you know, were always at the youth center and the Boys and Girls Club, kind of it stuck with me.
How's that different from, we've talked to a lot of coaches about this, how's that different the way you grew up compared to how the kids that you're coaching today grew up in the game?
Well, you know, for us, there wasn't the, you know, the social media. There wasn't the, you know, the game craze, the Fortnites, and all those things. Yep. As you guys know, for us, it was, you know, you were out in the yard or you were outside, and it just seemed for me that, you know, the neighborhood that I grew up in, there was a basketball goal, a hoop somewhere, and that's where, you know, we all. From the time we got up, you just couldn't wait to get outside and to play, you know, the game. So for me, it was really easy. You know, I learned to compete early, playing against older guys in my neighborhood, and it kind of stuck with me. Today, you know, there's so much more for all kids that takes their time or that they want to be involved with, other than just going out, you know, outside and picking up a basketball and hooping.
Yeah, they don't have as much, I think, freedom in a sense of we had when we were kids. I think we had more free time and we weren't as scheduled, and therefore we could just go out and, you know, play pickup basketball or go out and pick up the football and get a game together with the kids in the neighborhood. Whereas today, kids are much more scheduled. They have soccer practice on this day, and they have violin lessons here, and they have, you know, they got to be on their basketball practice or their travel team or whatever the case may be. And I think that it definitely provides just a different way of growing up in the game than it was when we were kids. And I'm not sure, you know, we go back and forth on which way is better or worse. And I guess I'm always tend to go on the old school side, where I feel like the way that I grew up in the game was better. But I definitely think that there's some positives to the way that kids get exposed, in my opinion, to much better coaching at an earlier age than kids did when we were kids.
Yeah, I would agree with that in a sense. But I think, you know, a lot of that, and we can talk on this conversation for days, is, you know, the effect. And, you know, I remember so many times, you know, there would be, you know, a neighborhood full of kids and no adults around, and we would play, and, you know, there would be a problem or, an argument or something, and there wasn't a referee or a parent there to, you know, to solve that problem. We solved it. And, you know, I think today it's a reset mode where, you know, the kids are so used to, you know, a parent jumping in, or, you know, even a coach, somebody jumping in to solve those problems for those kids, when they, you know, it just seemed like we figured it out. And today I think it's society in general, it's just real easy to just put the reset button and, you know, let's start this all over again. But,
I totally agree with you. You know, I'm a teacher, and I teach fourth grade, and these kids don't know how to solve their own problems a lot of times. And it's really sad, because I mean, I'm 32 years old, so I'm not as old as Mike over here. But when I was a kid, we were kind of told, you know, figure it out, solve your problems. Yeah. Whereas these kids now, they come to school, you know, my school year started like 3 weeks ago, and they were completely like lost puppy dogs going around the school, and they weren't able to like figure out their own problems. And I love what you just talked about. You know, these kids just don't know how to deal with it, and they expect mommy and daddy to fix it for them.
No, I agree. And, you know, and I'm a parent, and, you know, I'm not saying I don't do the same, because you want to be able to help. But I think there was a lot of learning involved at an early age for me and for the kids that I ran around with. And I'm sure it was the case for most of us back then, was, you know, you just at some point in time it became, well, is the game going to end? Are we going to go inside? Are we going to solve it and continue to play? And we just figured it out. And I think there was a lot of life lessons involved in that.
As a coach, do you think that the fact that the kids today don't have those same opportunities to make the rules for the games, to solve problems, to interact with other kids, and especially kids of different age groups, do you think that as a coach, do you think that provides a special challenge? And that, are there things that maybe you have to do as a coach to give them opportunities to kind of develop those skills that maybe 20, 30 years ago kids would have come in with those skills? Is there any things that you do like to give your kids leadership and ownership and some of the things that you're doing, whether it's in practice or games, or how would you approach that?
Oh, I think so. And I think that's a great point. I think there's always opportunities, learning opportunities to do that. Whatever you're doing with your culture of your team is, you know, and most of the time it always seems like you try to find, you know, that inner leadership within your team, and you bounce things constantly off of them to take that ownership and leadership to, you know, let's, and we allow, you know, during practice even, you know, there's many times where we give kids a timeout. They can take a timeout on their own, and we want them to, you know, if something doesn't go right or not the way we planned, you know, burn one of your timeouts, grab your team and get them back, and let's get right back on the same page. And so I think that's such an important, you know, part of what we do is as leaders and as coaches, is try to figure out a way to put them in situations where they're going to learn from each other, but they're also going to, you know, be there for each other to pick each other up when things aren't going the way they're planned.
Yeah, for sure. I think if you can empower them to be able to have that ownership in the team and the decision-making process, I think you end up with a much better team when things are player-driven as opposed to always having to be coach-driven.
Yeah, I think the best teams that I've been a part of as a player And as I've been a part of as a coach and been blessed to been around a lot of good teams and coaches are the teams that, like you said, that just have that internal, you know, that leadership within that, you know, regardless, you know, we're going to get it right. And most of that time that comes from your senior leadership who knows, you know, the culture, has been in the culture and understands the value of that.
So you grew up in, I'm assuming, a tremendous culture because your high school coach was a Hall of Fame coach there in Arkansas.
Oh, yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about your experience as a high school player playing under your high school coach and talk a little bit about what made him so special to you in your life? And then let's transition from there into how you got into coaching. Did he inspire you to get into coaching?
Well, you know, Coach Joe Kretschmeyer is who you're talking about, and he was so instrumental in so many things. Looking back at the time, I may not have thought so because, you know, as a teenager especially, you think you have all the answers. When you find out later, you really didn't. But, you know, for him, it was just – it was one of those things that, you know, he was tough, and he was tough to play for, and he was one that, as a younger kid looking up, I always wanted to be a Purple Dog basketball player. You know, that was a big deal for me, and I would go to games and watch, and he was so demanding, and, you know, he was tough, and he preached discipline and toughness, and, you know, there were many guys that I grew up with that were good basketball players that chose not to play just because they felt like they couldn't handle that. And, you know, I have to admit there were times, you know, I questioned myself over the 3 years that I played for him at Fayetteville High. But, you know, ultimately he was trying to get the best out of us. He was trying to prepare us for life after. And so it was tough. You know, every day he challenged you to be the best you could be. You weren't allowed to have a bad day or an off day. And when you walked through that locker room door and touched the floor, he demanded your best. And if you didn't give it, boy, you were exposed in a hurry. And so, you know, the culture was, you know, we're going to compete as hard as we can. And those practices, I remember them, you know, like they were yesterday. They were, you know, even though those were your buddies and your best friends, you were competing for a job. And he created so many ways and so many opportunities within a practice that if you weren't ready for that, you know, you were probably going to fall behind. And so, he always wanted to be, you know, a Fayetteville basketball player. And I wouldn't say he necessarily, you know, kind of led me into coaching, but he definitely led me into, you know, the love of basketball. And as far as, you know, I just couldn't wait to play for him. And those experiences still to this day, I bounce so many things that he taught me and so many things looking back that he was preaching. You know, I find myself from time to time reflecting back on those times.
And so when you look back on your childhood before you even got to the high school, I heard you say, you know, you went to games as a kid and, you know, you looked up to those players and you wanted to eventually, you know, be able to play for Fayetteville High. What was it about that as a goal? What was it about the atmosphere, the culture of the team, the community? What was it that really attracted you and said, hey, I'm in, you know, fifth grade or sixth grade or however old you were at the time that said, hey, wow, I want to be a part of that? What was it?
I think it was a combination of all you just said. I think the community support, you know, it was, I just remember, you know, it just seemed like everybody, you know, family, friends, everybody on Tuesday and Friday nights, the Fayetteville High gym was packed, and it was a great atmosphere, and, you know, you couldn't help but just get chills every time you went to watch a game. And the other thing was they were winning a lot, and so, you know, as a kid going to a gym, a packed arena, you know, and seeing the guys that you kind of looked up to, you know, when I was a kid, you know, in the 70s, especially, they were winning state championships. And you know, I wanted to be a part of that. And fortunately, and was blessed enough to play on a state championship team my sophomore year. And I just remember the whole community, you know, rallying around us, and that's special. You know, when we got buy-in from, not only your peers, but, you know, the people in the community coming out to support you every time you touch the floor. It's special.
So we're here in Ohio, and I feel like comparatively to the era of the 70s and 80s, when I think of high school basketball and I think of the community support and I think of the student body support, it feels like, at least here, that support was stronger back in the 70s and 80s than it is today. And so I was just curious, in your experience there at Fayetteville, would you say that that's a similar thing that's going on there, or would you say that the community support and student body support is similar to what you grew up in?
No, I think it's similar in a lot of ways. You still have, you know, we were just talking about that today after practice, coaches sitting around and you know, just about the fact that there's so many alumni that are out there that still come back and will watch, even though they may or may not have kids that are coming through the high school or whatever. They, you know, they either played in that environment or they grew up in that environment, watching games and being a part of Fayetteville basketball. And so it's nice to see still to this day that people still care and people still, you know, are passionate about us having success. So I would say, you know, it's probably similar to what it was.
Yeah, that's tremendous. I mean, I know that just speaking from a personal standpoint as both a player and a coach, when you get an opportunity to play or coach in an environment where people are passionate about basketball, to me, there's nothing. I mean, there's nothing better. When I was coaching and had an opportunity to, you know, go with some teams into the regionals here in Ohio, and you know, you go and you play in a, you know, a little bigger arena, and you're playing in front of 5,000 or 6,000 people, and you know, the fans are excited, your community gets behind you. There's really nothing that compares to that, you know, whether you're talking as a player or a coach. So it's great that you still have that atmosphere there in Fayetteville.
You bet. It's a special thing, and we don't take that for granted, you know, and we share with our young men every day that, you know, you can look around our gym at the banners and the people that have played before you, and it's not about us. It's about all those that played before you, and that you know, you're blessed to be a part of something special. And let's make sure that, you know, we're creating memories that last a lifetime.
Is there anything that you guys do as a staff to reach out and connect with the youth players in your community so that you develop that feeling that you had when you were a kid of, wow, I can't wait to play for Fayetteville High when I get to high school? Is there any special things you guys are doing?
Yeah, that's a big deal for us. And we just scheduled and we've been meeting with our youth coaches the last couple of weeks. And I think mid-October, the 14th, maybe the 13th, whatever that Saturday is, we're hosting. We've got all of our youth coaches. We're giving a clinic in our gym, as well as a players' clinic where our players, you know, are going to coach the youth. It's third through sixth graders. And so we'll have every third and sixth grader in our community in our gyms that day, and that's a big day for us. It kind of kicks off basketball season, you know, for not only our youth but for us as well. And so we're excited about that opportunity.
Really quick question. I don't know how AAU runs down there and how rampant that is, but how do you feel the AAU game has affected the way that you handle the youth sports or youth basketball in your guys' town?
Well, it's kind of a, you know, I look at it several ways. There's good and there's bad, and that's the best way I know how to say it. You know, we're really, really, and I always have been this way, really, really protective of our guys and who we're releasing them to in the summer, as far as AAU goes. And we've got kids that play on all different levels of AAU. It seems like there's more different opportunities, different tournaments every week for young people to play, whatever level it is. There's somewhere out there they can play. I think there's some good in it, but there's also, you know, maybe some that aren't necessarily, you know, concerned about the overall product or the development of young people. And so we make sure that our kids are with people that understand the value of, you know, you're going to get coached and we're going to put you in situations to make you successful, but we're also going to be hand in hand with your junior high and your high school coaches, teaching you the things that are important and the things that are going to help you be successful.
Yeah, I think you make a great point there. One of the things that, you know, parents come to me a lot and ask for advice about, you know, what league should I play in? What AAU team should I play with? What AAU club? And, you know, I'm sure just like there in Arkansas, we have lots and lots of different groups out there that are doing AAU and, you know, to varying degrees of success. And one of the things that I always tell the parents is that really the most important factor in your AAU experience is going to be your coach. And, you know, you can be with the best club and get the worst coach and have a terrible experience, or you can be with the worst club and have a great coach and you could have a very good experience, because ultimately the coach is the person who day to day is helping to develop you as a player and hopefully trying to develop you as a person as well. So do you guys work to build relationships with those coaches that, you know, do the things that you want to have done with your players in the summertime?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, it's just being a well-rounded, I think at times, and I'll put the blame on us as high school coaches, sometimes we get our feathers ruffled or we get, you know, bent the wrong way, maybe towards AAU coaches, you know, and I think it has to be a positive, because it's not going to go away, and it has to be a working relationship to where, you know, there's trust, in the fact that I know they're going to have the child's best interest, and hopefully they understand that we're doing the same. You have to work together. It's not going to work if one side, you know, feels maybe a hidden jealousy or an agenda. And so we make sure that, you know, we're communicating and we all stay on the same page.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is for anybody who's involved in youth basketball, high school basketball, AAU basketball, if we all could just keep our focus on what's in the best interest of the kid. And I understand that people have basketball businesses and I have a basketball business. And but at the same time, you can run a basketball business and still have the best interest of the kids that you serve at heart. And I think if we get, you know, again, most of the people that are in this are in it for the right reasons. And it's just a matter of getting all those people connected so that, again, we can do what's right by our players, whether they're third grade players playing for the very first time or they're high school varsity players that are on their way to, you know, play Division I college basketball. If we look out for the kids' interest first, I think we're going to be successful. And it sounds like that's what you guys are trying to cultivate there with your high school program and the relationships you're building with the AAU coaches in your area.
Absolutely.
So let's jump back. Brad, let's jump back to how you got into coaching, and then we'll kind of go through the chronology of your coaching career, because there's some interesting things that we want to hit on in terms of your role as an assistant, your role as a head coach, and how those things have played themselves out over the course of your career. So how'd you get into coaching initially? What attracted you to say, hey, you know, I've played this game my whole life. Now I want to transition into being a coach. Was there one singular moment, or was it something that you just kind of fell into?
You know, it's I look back at it, and I think more than anything else for me, obviously the love of the game. You couldn't play the game forever, and I realize that. But two, and probably the most important, is there's always somebody in your life that's impacted you in a positive way that you can look back on. And for me, it's real simple, and it's Kyle Adams. And you know, my eighth grade year was his first year at Woodland Junior High, which is my junior high school, and so I got the opportunity to be one of his first groups to come through Woodland, and I played for him, and it was just immediate for me. I kind of hit it off with him because I knew he was in it, and he wanted to make me a better player as well as my teammates, and just the impact he had, you know, on me. He made the game fun, but he also, you know, he was demanding in a way that, you know, you were going to give everything you had for him because you wanted to make him proud. And so when I finished playing college basketball, didn't really know what I wanted to do, and reached out to him because the impact he had on my life, and he had an opportunity to, or an opening for me to join his staff and coach his eighth grade. And so that was my first coaching opportunity. He told me at that time, he said, you know, he was honest with me. He said, if this is, you know, a path you want to go, you know, dive into it. And he said, I'm just going to throw you in the fire. And for me, it was pretty simple. I went to the first practice and absolutely fell in love with that part of it, the day-to-day interaction, you know, with young people and seeing the impact that a coach had on me, but in turn that I could have on others was a very, very powerful thing. So, you know, that was my first job, Woodland Junior High, and it seemed like, you know, that wasn't too long ago. And now, you know, so many years later, Kyle Adams, the same guy, drew me back to him at Fayetteville High. So it's kind of a neat deal for me.
Yeah, for sure. It's amazing that the number of coaches that we've talked to that have a similar story in terms of someone who impacted them when they were young, some coach that took an interest in them, pushed them to be beyond what maybe they thought they could be, really poured into them, not just on the basketball court, but just as a kid, and took an interest in their life. And then that particular interaction spurred people on to want to be involved and be a part of a coach. And it tells you again that as a coach, you don't always realize what that impact is that you're having. It sometimes it doesn't show up always 5 minutes after you impart some great wisdom. Sometimes it doesn't show up till 20 years later or 30 years later in the person's life. And it just reminds us all, whether we're coaches or teachers or parents, that the words we use and the things we say and the way we interact with our kids and our students and our players has an impact far beyond what we do right there in the moment.
Yeah, that's absolute, and that's well said, and I couldn't agree more.
So after you have this introduction to coaching, you get in, you're coaching the eighth grade underneath your mentor Kyle Adams. You move up to the assistant's job at Fayetteville. Talk a little bit about that as you go up to the JV level. How did that change your approach to coaching, or did you continue to do things in a similar fashion?
Well, it was neat because, you know, you develop those relationships at the junior high, you know, the high school feeder program, and then, you know, you jump up and you know, instantly you've got a guy like a Ronnie Brewer who I had as a 7th, 8th, and 9th, and then move up and have him 10th, 11th, 12th. And, you know, you've got a pro that you're coaching, and his group was really good. And so to move up, to be a part of something that you grew up wanting to be a part of as a player, and then all of a sudden you're, you know, on the sidelines bringing kids up, it was an unbelievable thing, an experience. And, you know, those days were a lot of fun. Trying to, you know, get a team back to a state championship level was a challenge, and it was a lot of fun for sure.
So coaching Ronnie Brewer, at what point – so you coached him for 6 years basically.
I did, yeah.
So was there a point where you realized, hey, this guy has a chance to have an NBA career, or was it something that you're like, wow, he's really good, but – you never necessarily saw that on the horizon? How did that, that's one of the things that I think fascinates, whether it's, you know, parents or kids who are listening, like how, at what point do people who really know basketball realize, hey, this kid has a chance to do something special?
Well, you knew he was really good early. I just remember so many times as when he was a seventh grader, he was playing up on the eighth grade. So he was a year younger and, you know, he was just a skinny kid with long arms and long legs, and you know, it was one of those things for him is he saw a play ahead of everybody else, and he knew where everybody was, and he would make a spectacular play or a pass to somebody who just couldn't catch it or couldn't make the play because they didn't have that skill and that he did. And I remember, you know, he would pout and he would get disappointed and frustrated, and many conversations with him, you know, one-on-one, that, hey, Ronnie, you know, the good Lord gave you this gift and this skill, and others don't have that. And so you just got to understand that you got to pick them up and lead them in a direction you want them to go. And, you know, what was neat for me is year to year for Ronnie, you know, obviously he got a little stronger as he went. But for him, it was just every summer he came back, he got better at some aspect of his game. And I think probably early on, you know, because of his dad, you know, being an NBA player, you kind of felt like, you know, he was going to be a successful player. You just didn't know on what level. Once he got to high school and, you know, we were playing, you know, big-time teams in tournaments his junior and senior year, when he came back summer before his senior year, he was just a different animal altogether. You know, his body got bigger and stronger, and his confidence was off the charts. And you know, I just remember when we started practice that fall, we knew we had somebody special in him. And we kind of rode, you know, we got on his shoulders and his back, and he kind of carried us.
And once he leaves Fayetteville High and you're watching him as he progresses through his career, what's that feeling like as you watch somebody who you had obviously a big hand in, you know, his development? How much pride do you take in getting an opportunity to watch him succeed at the next couple of levels of basketball?
Well, you know, there's a great sense of pride, you know, not only, you know, being I would say a fraternity brother, because we all played, you know, in the same program and the same culture, but just seeing him as a young boy, and just those, you know, those times, like I told you earlier, the one-on-one conversations and the growth and development of a young man, and then see, you know, what he did as a career. It was great pride, and still to this day, you know, every time we get together and we see him and we get to visit, we talk about those and those memories, and they'll never leave us. And you know, I was telling this story the other day, and he reminded me of this, matter of fact. I remember late night, they were playing on the West Coast, the Lakers, and he was guarding Kobe, and I was up late watching the game. And you know, mine, they're 2 hours different, time difference, but I remember calling him during the game, knowing that he wasn't going to answer, but he'd get my voicemail, and just leaving him a voicemail telling him to get back on defense. back on defense.
I'm sure he appreciated that. I'm sure he really appreciated that.
Yeah. He probably heard your voice echoing in his head anyway, even without the voicemail.
Oh yeah. So for his time, which he was on a different time schedule than I was, obviously. I remember the phone ringing in the middle of the night, what seemed like the middle of the night for me, and answering the phone, and all I could hear was, "Coach, I did get back on defense." So, you know, it's a neat relationship for sure, and I'm very proud of him, not just of his playing career, but who he's become and the young man he is now.
So after that first stint as an assistant at Fayetteville, you get your first head coaching job at Shiloh Christian. So talk a little bit about that opportunity, how it came to be, and then what you had to do to transition from being an assistant coach to being a head coach.
Yeah, it was, you know, when the job opened up, going through the interview process, everybody, we all have an inner circle of whether family, friends. For me, it was my coaching friends and the people that were closest to me, I would say, were all, you know, questioning the decision, saying, "Why would you go to a football school who's won one game the year before? And, you know, it's your first head coaching job. Why are you doing this?" And I remember, you know, sitting there and making a decision for me is, you know, why wouldn't I go do this? You know, when people are – and I've always kind of felt that way, that I think we all need a chip on our shoulder from time to time. And for me, you know, it was a no pressure situation. I'm going from an awesome basketball culture at Fayetteville High and tradition to a place that just wasn't used to having a basketball program or used to winning in any sort of at all. And so that was intriguing. It was an opportunity that was a challenge for me. I knew coming in that it was going to be tough to start. But luckily I had some parents and a community that, you know, they were starving, you know, for a basketball program. And so, you know, we jumped right in and rolled our sleeves up and saw some things. And we had a group that was coming up as eighth graders at that time, that we kind of got to start coaching. And that senior class, you know, they'd been through so much. They'd been through two or three coaching changes in their time. You know, I think fondly of that group because they bought in right away and we started to change. And I feel like, you know, over a course of time, with the help of great assistance and a great parental support, that we accomplished some great things there.
So how did you put together your staff when you get your first job? Now you're there and you've left your hometown school. And now you're looking around. Where did you get your staff, and what did you look for? What qualities were you looking for in those assistants that you brought on board to help you to build a new culture?
Yeah, that's a great question, and you know, I think that's so important. The assistant head coach relationship is so important. Number one, it's built on loyalty and trust. You know, you can't. Many times, and I've found this, you know, even today that. For whatever reason, parents want to vent or people want to vent, they'll never go to the head coach to vent. They'll go to the assistant coach and you know, they'll let them know how they feel. And so that loyalty really comes into play then. And so, you know, we started an interview process and brought many in. And I had a guy, you know, our first 2 years that was a young coach that I knew had some energy, is Mark Simmons. He came in, was with me for 2 years, and then he left, and then I had an opportunity to hire Greg White, and you guys know Greg, and
for sure.
Yeah. You know, he sold me on the fact when he came in that, hey, I'm going to be your number one guy, and I'm going to do whatever I can to help you and help this program, and you know, the rest is history. We turned it around turned it around so much that, you know, whenever I got a different job at Springdale High School, I went back and hired him again. So, you know, it's such a big deal to have that guy in the number one seat beside you that doesn't have any agendas other than trying to help you become the best you can be. But also, you know, they're a program guy. They're going to do whatever it takes to make sure every single detail is taken care of so that when you show up on a day-to-day, you know, you're ready to roll.
Yeah, I think as an assistant, one of the things that I actually spent 13 years as a varsity assistant coach here in Ohio with the same head coach. So we had the exact same staff for 13 years, and it was just a tremendous working relationship between myself as the varsity assistant, our varsity head coach, and then our junior varsity coach. And we had a lot of success, and I think what I attribute a lot of that to, obviously, is our head coach was an outstanding coach, but it was also just the rapport and the trust that the three of us had for one another, that if something had to get done, we all knew that each person had their role and would take care of what needed to be taken care of. And I think when you can depend on your staff to do the things that you need them to do, and oftentimes maybe without even having to tell them what needs to be done, especially the longer you've been together, you kind of get to feel for, hey, this is what needs to be done by this assistant. This is what this assistant needs to be doing. And everybody kind of fits into their role. And then that's when you can really be off and rolling as a staff, when everybody has that trust and camaraderie that I think develops over time, which just sounds like you and Greg had as you know, went from one job to another.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, you're with each other so much. You know, your families become, you know, connected, and it's a neat thing. And you know, the ups and downs you go through, and the highs and lows of this job, the roller coaster ride that it is. That person that's with you, that co-pilot, well, he can pick you up and when you need to be picked up. So. You know, I'm fortunate and blessed to have had assistant coaches over the years in different capacities and different jobs. That kind of, you know, now that I'm back in that role, it's really helped me look at things a lot differently. Going from, you know, a head coach back to an assistant that I saw and the assistants that I had and the things that they taught me and showed me the nuts and bolts and the things that you have to do to make sure that you're prepared. It's really helped me in my job now.
So what, as let's look at this question first from a head coach's perspective. So if you're a head coach, what do you do to empower and help to grow your assistants as coaches?
Well, I think you set up, you know, when you're the head coach, you're the face of the program. And, you know, all those things that sometimes we may not want to do, but we have to do, you know, getting out and going and speaking and doing all those things away from the basketball floor that take you away from the basketball floor, you have to put a lot of, you know, confidence in the fact that your staff is gonna have you, you know, ready to go. And so we had, you know, a planning period, you know, every day and before basketball practice where, you know, our staff meetings were, hey, look, you know, this is what I need you to do. Do you feel comfortable doing this? And then many times I would say, hey, come up with a practice plan tomorrow. We're doing defense. You know, you've got 20 minutes. Whatever you need to do in 20 minutes, do it. And so you empower those assistant coaches. And to me, it was real simple because I had assistant coaches that I knew were going to climb quickly in their own careers. And so I knew they were hungry. And you know, I guess I was lucky in that aspect that, you know, I didn't have somebody that wanted to be a career assistant coach. They wanted to be a head coach. And so I would bounce so many things off of them, you know, to make sure that they understood that, you know, I trust in them and I know we're on the same page.
Yeah, I think it's very, very important. I think the key word that I pulled out of what you just said is empower. I know I've talked to guys that have been assistants in other programs where obviously I haven't been privy to the inner workings of all those programs, but where the head coach has assistants, but the head coach is micromanaging and running every single aspect of the program. And so the assistants are kind of there in name only.
And whether
that's because the head coach maybe doesn't trust the assistants as much as they should, or they're not as qualified as you'd like them to be, or whatever the case might be, I think when a head coach can empower the assistant or the assistants to be able to do things like you just described, like, hey, you got 20 minutes in practice to work on skill X, come up with the practice plan for that time. Now, A, you're showing your faith in that assistant that you believe that they're going to come up with something that's going to be productive. And you're also causing them to, again, stretch themselves and come up with something that's going to benefit, you know, the team. And it just is a great way of looking at it from a head coach's perspective and how you're trying to help your assistants not only help your team in the moment, not only help your program be successful, but ultimately, if your assistants do have an ambition to go on and be head coaches, I think it's your job. I think we have an obligation as coaches to try to help bring other people along. And that's what I hear you saying, which again is super impressive, Brad.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, like I told you earlier, you know, when I look at the fact that, you know, I've had several coaches that were by my side at different places that are now head coaches and running their programs. And, you know, that's another thing that, you know, brings me great joy to see the success that they have. You know, that's special. And that coach tree that I talked about earlier with Coach Kretschmeyer and Coach Adams, all of us, you know, being Fayetteville. But when you develop your own coaching tree of guys that are on your staff that are now, you know, leading other programs across the state, boy, you just pull for them because, you know, they've earned it and they've done everything they can to put themselves in a situation to be successful.
You of course only pull for them when you're not playing them, right?
That's a great point. Yeah, I want to win every game, especially, you know, like a Greg White and Jeremy Price who are in our conference. You know, I want them to win every game but the two we play them against.
So how heated are those personal rivalries that you have with your former Sixers? How special are those games?
They're special. You know, it's we give each other a hard time, whether it's, you know, the morning of the game or the day of the game. You know, I might send them a text telling them, you know, we're running an amoeba defense against them tonight, you know, something crazy just to get in their head a little bit. But we have a lot of fun with it. But once that ball goes up, you know, I can promise you from both sidelines, it's we're going to do everything we can to make sure our team is successful against them. So it's a lot of fun, though.
So talk about how you built the culture at Shiloh from a team that won one game the year before you got there into a team that won 28 games and went to the state semifinals your last year. What did you build your program on? What were the things, if we went and saw those teams play and we walked away from the game, what would we say? Wow, Coach Stamps here, his teams are what, how would people describe your team?
I think anybody that was in that league, and that was a great league of coaches and men, you know, at that time period for me, that are good friends of mine today, you know, they would tell you number one was just, we were really good and sound defensively. It was something that we hung our hat on from day one. And, you know, that was ingrained in me at an early age, working for Coach Adams and working for Coach Kretschmeyer. The best defensive teams most of the time are going to win. And so we came in and changed a philosophy as, you know, we're going to be the best defensive team on the floor when we play. And then the other thing was just for us, it was a belief system that, you know, we can do this, we're going to do this. And so, you know, we had a fan base that, golly, it, you know, looking back at it, they were so involved in our program. I think sometimes that scares people away. This was my first head coaching job, but I had parents, you know, that I remember calling me, you know, every week saying, Coach, what can we do for you? What can we do for your kids this week? And so we just took the floor and we took off running. We had kids that bought in from day one. We sold them on the fact that, hey, look, you know, we're going to turn this thing around and we're going to play in what back then, you know, in Hot Springs for the state finals someday, and you're going to be a part of this. And we did everything we could to make sure that happened. It was a great thrill to come in with a group my first year to win 7 games and then, you know, 3 years later be playing for a chance to go to Hot Springs and play in a state championship. It was we wouldn't have done it without great assistant coaches, like I told you before, great community support, but then ultimately just a bunch of young men that believed that we were going to get it done.
I know you. I think you mentioned earlier that Shiloh was a predominantly football heavy school when you took that job. How hard was it to get them to buy in originally into the basketball and buy into the concept that you could be successful and be successful at football at the same time?
Yeah, and you know it was tough. I remember, you know, that first year especially. You know, we had. And this sounds funny, but it's true. The center of the football team was also our starting point guard at some point during the season.
We won't ask you to describe his body type there.
Yeah, exactly. You can probably imagine, you know, and it was one of those things where at Shiloh, they were winning, you know, state championships in football. And, we started basketball season, and you know we would play our first 10 to 12 basketball games, in essence, with our JV, because our varsity kids were on the football field, and so they would come in after football season, beat up, banged up, and then you know trying to fit them in and get them ready as quick as we could was a challenge, but you know once we worked well communication-wise with the football coaches that, hey, you know, the same kids that you're relying on to win on Friday nights, we're going to rely on to win on Tuesday and Friday nights. And so why can't we put this young man in a situation to where he's going to leave high school and he's going to have a great football experience. He's going to have a great basketball experience. And so we worked well with the football coaches in that aspect.
How challenging have you found that at all the different places that you've been to balance the need for, I don't know, fighting over athletes is the wrong word, but you know what I'm trying to say here, that, you know, coaches sometimes tend to get territorial with their players, and they want, you know, they want kids to be at off-season workouts, or they want kids to be here or there. So how has the relationship been with other sports in the programs that you've been involved with?
Well, it's always been simple for me. Because I've worked with people that understood the value of, you know, one-on-one communication. And I just remember, you know, my first year at Springdale High School, taking my calendar and walking over to the football field house before the school year was over and saying, okay, here's what I've got planned for team camps. I need, you know, these young men for team camps. Let me see your schedule, and them showing me exactly what they needed the young people for, and we just decided early on, and I've still stuck that way, and Coach Adams is very good at it too, that, you know, hey, look, let's don't put a family in a situation where they have to choose between two, because ultimately we lose the kid, both of us do. And so let's put them in a situation to where, you know, we can give and take, and make sure that they're getting the best of both worlds.
That's fantastic, but it's a shame that places that we know that doesn't happen. I think what I would pull out of what you said is a one-on-one conversations, because I know I've been in lots of conversations with coaches where, you know, you go behind closed doors and people are complaining about the other sport, and this guy does that, and why do they have to have the kids do this, but there's never a direct line of communication opened up between the two programs where, again, if we go back to an early part of our conversation, if you're trying to do what's best for the kid, which is ultimately what all of us should be trying to do, despite our desire to win and have kids be involved in our program, I think we're going to be able to come to a better decision and a better working relationship between coaches. And I think it's a shame that more coaches don't do what you just described, which is just walk up to the other person and have a conversation.
I think that's it. I think it just boils down to, you know, that communication, you know, that we're not going to do anything to hurt not only the development of the young player, but also, you know, hurt that relationship between the two. Because we're in the same business, and that's impacting young people's lives and trying to get the most out of them. And so, being able to work together is a big deal, and you know, I've been fortunate enough that I've worked with many different football coaches, and I guess I'm one of the few, I guess, that have had football coaches that have understood and valued the same things that we do.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I know you don't always run into that. Sometimes you do run into somebody who can be a little bit hard-headed on either side, whether it's basketball or football. And so it's great when you can find people who have the same values that you do.
They're not out there on both sides. You know, they're out there on the basketball side. They're out there
definitely.
On football. They're out there, but I haven't been in those situations to where, you know, you're banging your head against the wall because of a young man that you feel you need to have is somewhere else because they feel like they have to have him.
For sure. So you spent 4 years there at Shiloh. You built the program from a one-win team before you got there to a 28-win team after year four. And then you leave to go become an assistant coach. Talk about that decision, why that happened, what the process was, and then what the adjustment was for you after having gone through your first experience as a head coach.
Well, it was that particular situation going from Shiloh to Harbor at that time. That wasn't an easy decision. It was a decision that, you know, I struggled with. The head coach at Harbor at that time Eric Burnett was, he was like a brother to me. We grew up together playing, you know, he played at Fort Smith Northside. I played at Fayetteville. We were rivals in high school, but we were teammates in AAU. And so we grew up playing with each other and traveling the country together, from kids all the way through. And so when a brother calls you and says, hey, look, I've lost my assistant coach. Won't you come be with me? And it was a new school. It was a brand new program. And I told him no, I believe maybe 2-3 times. And he was just kept being persistent. Hey, look, you know, I need you here. I've got you here. Let's do this thing. You got to help me get our program to where it needs to go. And ultimately I caved, I guess, and took the job. And it was a great experience. Met new people, worked for some good people there, and had an opportunity to work closely with, you know, one of my dear friends.
Was it a big adjustment to go from being the ultimate decision maker?
Oh yeah.
To drop down where maybe, again, obviously you didn't agree, I'm sure, with every single decision that was made. I'm sure there was back and forth. And so when you're the head coach, obviously you have the final say, and when you're the assistant, you don't. So how big of an adjustment was that for you?
It was a transition, and you know, it's both situations, and I know you're going to get to this in a minute, but both situations for me, going from a head coaching job at Shiloh of winning 28 games and you know, getting to a game away from a state championship game, going from a head coach back to an assistant, it was tough. But then going from Springdale of playing in a state championship game back to Fayetteville, both those situations were because of the two people, ultimately the two people that, you know, were calling on me to come be by their side were both so I was very close with, and knew that, you know, when I could hear their voice and the fact that, you know, they needed somebody, it was real easy for me at the end of the day to say, you know what, let's put my pride aside and let's go serve and help them become the best they can be.
So did people around you, whether it was your inner circle or maybe people in the larger community, give you some negative feedback about the decision to leave? Hey, you've been a successful head coach. Why would you want to go back and be an assistant?
Yeah, that did happen, not in the capacity from Shiloh to Harbor, because you're going from, you know, a 3A job classification to the top, you know, at Harbor. Mm-hmm. So it was in some people's minds, it was a step up, a jump. Even though you're going from a head coach, you're jumping up classifications. Now when I went from, you know, a lateral, what some people feel is a lateral from a conference team from a head coach to an assistant, I heard some pushback and had people trying to talk me out of it, you know. And so you hear all that and you talk about it, and you know, for me it was always pretty simple. I'm going home. I'm going back to, you know, a place that's been so special. You know, I grew up wanting to be a part of it, and you know, years later you've got a guy that in Kyle Adams that brought you into the business, you know, and gave you your first opportunity to get into the business, and here he is calling on you saying, you know what, I've got limited time left, won't you come back and be together with me? We started this thing together, won't you come in this for me and be by my side? And so that was really simple for me, because of the impact, once again, that somebody has on your life. And it was a pay it forward situation for me. Why wouldn't I go back to somebody who gave me that opportunity that meant so much to me? It was really easy.
So the theme that I hear running through all the coaching decisions that you've made and the staffs that you've worked with, whether you're head coach and you have assistants, or whether you are the assistant and you have a head coach, is the relationships that you've built through your time in basketball are some of the things that are most important to you? And if we think about that, not only from a coaching standpoint, but just, again, talking about your players and the relationships that you build with them, how important are those things in the course of your career as you look at what you've been able to do in the game and what's been important to you? Describe how those relationships have really driven the decisions that you've made.
Oh, I think that's ultimately it comes down to that, and that's always been number one for me. And anybody that knows Brad Stamps will tell you that that's number one. Relationships are so big, you know, and you put so much into this, and you know, there's so much that both sides are given, and you know, you become family, and you know, you're just trying to impact people in a positive way. And I've had so many people that have given me opportunities in this game. This game has been so good to me, not just because of the personal memories that I have as a player, but as a coach. And at the end of the day, I wouldn't think that the wins and losses are going to define me, and I believe they're not. And those relationships still to this day, when I have teammates of mine that are going through things, or I have former players of mine that are calling me, inviting me to their weddings, or, you know, or telling me that they're, you know, I see they're graduating from college or they're having kids. There's nothing better than that.
I agree 100% there.
That's ultimately it's relationships. And I don't think, people have asked me this, I don't think, two things, and I talked about them, from Springdale, great, great experience, great memories. I'd go back there in a heartbeat and do that all over again. I learned so much there, great people that I worked with, great kids. But, you know, at the end of the day, I've got my alma mater and I've got my mentor both calling me home. And so I don't think I would have done that any other job or any other person, I wouldn't have left. And so blessed to be back by his side. You know, this is a coach that at an early age, you know, he's taught me how to be a father. He's taught me how to be a husband and a better man. And so, you know, to have that experience and to be by his side as he's in his career is something really special.
So what is it about Coach Adams, both in terms of your relationship with him off the floor and his coaching ability on the floor, that has made him such a special mentor for you in your career? That, again, besides it being your alma mater, I get the feeling from talking to you that Coach Adams could be coaching in another state, and if he had called you, you might have been willing to come and be a part of his staff. So beyond the alma mater piece of it, what is it about Coach Adams that, wow, this guy, this is what he means to me, this is why he's so important to me? What is it about him?
No, he's just easy to, you know, to be around, and you know, especially now, because we've created all those memories. But, you know, just a day-to-day, and he tells me all the time that he probably would have retired a lot earlier than this, but he's having so much fun, and it's a blast. It's a blast to come to work, to be around somebody like that. Our coaching staff, you know, Jordan Rose, the Jeff Bogarts, the Lance Fishers, the Kyle Adams, we have a blast. And you know, that rapport you talked about earlier, when you can come to work and do something that you truly love to do, and do it with people that you value, people that you have fun with, I mean, golly, I mean, I don't know if anybody deserves that.
Yeah, there's nothing better than, you know, like I said earlier, when I was with the coaching staff that I was with, and we were together for 13 years, and, you know, again, going into it, the three of us didn't necessarily know each other. We, you know, we had been aware of each other, but we certainly weren't friends going into it. And obviously, after 13 years, you leave that, you know, that coach's office with a completely different feeling for those people. That bond just doesn't go away. And there's nothing better than connecting with people on a coaching staff in a deep and meaningful way as you try to build your team year after year and try to build your culture and you try to impact kids, there's nothing better than the ability to be able to do that and have that long-lasting impact on kids as you move forward. As you think about moving on and eventually when Coach Adams retires,
yeah,
and you get the opportunity to take over your alma mater, talk about how special that's going to be for you the first time you walk out onto the floor as the head coach and you carry on the legacy of the great coaches that have come before you.
Yeah, that's, I think about that a lot. And, you know, it's one of those things that in the Fayetteville basketball circle, especially, it's a big deal. And, you know, our fraternity, it's from Joe Kretschmeyer to Kyle Adams, and hopefully myself. It's always been in-house. It's always been somebody that that played in that program, that grew up in that program in this community, and to have that is something that truly, you know, you can't put into words. And I'm looking forward to that every day. You know, now we come to work, you see that, you know, it's you know, regardless of how much time and what all you're doing, you put everything into it, and the time will come. But for right now, it's I don't know if it can be any better.
Well, I think one thing that comes through loud and clear is that no matter when the moment is when you get an opportunity to take over the program, you're going to miss Coach Adams far more than even the excitement of being able to take over the varsity job. I just think that it's obvious your respect and reverence for him comes through loud and clear.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, but I know him. He's going to be sitting about three rows behind the bench, and he's going to be heckling me every Tuesday. Telling me the things I'm doing wrong and making fun of the tie that I wear, and that's just who he'll be. But yeah, on a, you know, showing up at the office in the morning and not being able to drink coffee with him and joke around is, you know, I'm sure I'll be calling him as he's watching, you know, the early Price is Right and waking him up just to have those conversations for sure.
So as you look back on your coaching career to this point, want to wrap up with a couple questions related to just your growth as a coach. If you look back on, you know, your very first year when you were coaching the eighth grade, and now you've been in the business for a number of years, how have you grown and improved as a coach from when you first started?
Well, I think a lot of things. Perspective one, it's not all about, you know, at one time, you know, I felt like I've got to win, and put everything into that. That is important, being successful, but it's not the most important. It was at one time, and it's not anymore. The relationship piece is so much more to me. So I'd say perspective, number one. Number two is just, people talk all the time about kids have changed, but, you know, I don't really believe that. I think parenting has changed. And so I've seen that with my own two eyes. I'm a parent, and so I put myself in that category as well. That, you know, it's different. Kids need, they need somebody on a day-to-day that's going to hold them accountable, that's also going to be there through thick and thin, that they can confide in, believe in. And so, you know, I couldn't imagine being in any other profession that gives you what coaching gives me.
So the next question that I want to ask you is, I know one of the answers already to this question, so I'm going to try to dig a little deeper. But my question is, when you're looking to improve yourself as a coach, where do you go? And I know one of the places you go, just from talking to you for this hour or so, that you go to your fellow coaches, you go to guys you've worked with, you go to Coach Adams, and you go to the people that have been close to you. But besides those people that you have close relationships with, where do you go? Where do you look for inspiration? Where do you go to learn more about the coaching profession to try to develop yourself into the best coach that you can be?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's networking is so big in this business on any level. I'm fortunate that there's coaches that, you know, I grew up idolizing or watching that were giants in the coaching profession that are still here locally that aren't coaching anymore that are, you know, that I reach out to, guys like Marty Barnes, Charlie Smith, Jerry Bridges, you know, those individuals that you can call and bounce things off of, you know, and then just whether it's a high school coach across the state, guys like Wes Swift, Johnny Rice, those individuals that, you know, you coach against that you like what they do, coaching clinics where, you know, where you have an Arkansas Basketball Coaches Association now, that's growing, it's getting bigger. And we have, you know, great coaches come in, and so we get the opportunity to spend a day watching, you know, people that have been highly successful show what they do. And you know, it's the game itself, you know, it'll never change, but there's always little things that you can pick up. And if you're not growing, you know, somebody else is. And so it's a constant learning situation for us.
Let's wrap up with one final question, Brad, and that is, if you had any advice for a 22-year-old out there who's just starting their coaching career, what's a piece of advice or two that you would give somebody who's just starting out now that might fast-track them to learn from some of the mistakes or some of the things that you've learned from over the course of your career?
Well, surround yourself with good people. People that, you know, you can confide in, that you truly believe in and value, that aren't going to, you know, lead you astray, that are good, solid foundation. I would say balance, you know, it's something that I failed with early, but I'm blessed to have an awesome wife, that, you know, that she constantly is preaching to me about, you know, putting things in proper order and check. And so when we go through that, and, you know, it's a business that it's hard sometimes, and there's always going to be situations where you self-reflect and wonder if you could have done things different. But I think, you know, balance is so big, of balancing your personal, your social, you know, and your professional life. You know, it's tough, and it's sometimes you can get it out of whack and it can be skewed in a different direction. But if you balance it out, you know, that's the key.
Brad, this has been just a fantastic conversation. I feel like you've given us just a ton of things that any coach out there, any parent that's listening can take tremendous value from the things that you've said. Before we get out of here, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you'd like to share? And if not, if you want to just share how people can get in touch with you, whether it's email or Twitter or however people can get a hold of you, in case they want to reach out to you and connect with you.
Yeah, you know, it's I've got a B-Stamps 22. Twitter account. I'm not advanced beyond Twitter itself, but I do. Yeah.
I do want to say I was going through your Twitter, and you know, we're based out of Cleveland, and I saw you were tweeting about the Steelers. I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's for sure.
We won't hold that. We won't hold that too much against you.
Yeah, I understand. I was up late last night, sweating one through. Big lead and having to hold on late. But yeah, I'm a huge Steelers fan. Always have been. Grew up, you know, like I said earlier, a child of a young kid in the 70s, and when they were winning 4 Super Bowls, and then you know, just kind of stuck with them.
Who's your pro basketball team?
Boston Celtics.
All right.
I've been a Celtics fan from a young age too. I was a huge Larry Bird fan. Had an opportunity to meet Larry Bird in French Lick, Indiana, in 1993, 94, whatever that was. Still have that picture on my desk today.
That's cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, Brad, this has been tremendous. We want to thank you for jumping on the Hoop Heads podcast with us. It's just been a pleasure to talk to you. We wish you the best of luck in your upcoming season this year. And eventually, whenever you get an opportunity to take over the Fayetteville High program, we know you're going to do a tremendous job. So thank you for jumping on the podcast. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoop Heads podcast, brought to you by Head Start Basketball.